the freedom to move around the place. My wife said to me, coming down in the car tonight, "Speak up so that they can hear you." And usually I would move about a bit and maybe go away down. Nobody can hear what I say. So the mic will help. There's a wee text of scripture in the Psalms. It's Psalm 34, and it's verse 6. And the words are these, part of the verse. I always use it as I'm giving a word of testimony. And it says, "This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him." This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him. Someone has said that he could not boast of his love for the Lord because it has often waned. But he could boast of the Lord's love for him because it has been unchanged. And in the same way, I can say I can't boast of what I have done for the Lord, for oftentimes I should have done things that were left undone. But I can certainly boast of what the Lord has done for me. And you might remember in the Gospels, the Lord Jesus Christ told the man that was miraculously delivered from demon possession to go home and tell thy friends what great things the Lord hath done for thee and hath had compassion on thee. And I want to use this wee text tonight in the Psalm 34 to do just that. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him. And you'll see in the text there's the thought of poverty. Because David, who wrote the psalm, styles himself a poor man. Now, if you know anything about David, you'll know that he certainly wasn't poor in the sense of what this world could offer him. He would have plenty and to spare as far as that was concerned. But on this occasion, he's referring to something inward. He's referring to the state of his heart. He's referring to the need of his soul. He's talking about in real need of the Lord. And I can think about my younger life. I can think about poverty in the sense that we had nothing much as a family. And I'll tell you why. My father had his own little business. It wasn't anything very opulent, but he had his own business in Belfast. It was a cleaning business. I can remember helping him in later years in some of the bigger stores, C&A, which they don't have here now. They still have it in Spain and in Germany, but they don't have it here. And other stores, I would have been helping him. But apparently, he had quite a run of places to do. And I learned this from my older brother, that he just upped and left one day and went to London. And I don't know much of what happened in London, but he certainly didn't come back a better man. But we were left, my mother and the family were left in Belfast. I was born and brought up in the Lower Shankill area of Belfast, a fairly tough area, fairly loyalist area of Belfast, and we didn't have much at all. In fact, the very opposite. We had very, very little. We were brought up in poverty. We hadn't. And I can remember sitting eating dry bread. I can remember taking an HP sauce sandwich, just with dry bread, and putting the sauce on it and eating it. And various things I could tell you about then, but we certainly didn't have a good upbringing as far as the comforts of this life were concerned. I do remember, though, as a nipper going to children's meetings. There was a little church not that far from us, a little Elam church, and they had children's meetings. And I can remember going sort of fairly regular to it and singing the choruses. I can remember going for long walks on a Sunday afternoon. My father would have taken myself and some of the rest of the family to a place that they call Customs House Square, now in Belfast. They have pop concerts and everything else at it. But in those days, there were massive open-air gospel meetings. There were hundreds and hundreds of people about. And I can remember my father taking me down to those meetings. Obviously, I can't remember what was preached. And then, after the meetings were over, we went for a long walk and eventually home. But we did get something. Very little, though, but it was something. Of the sense that God existed and something could happen in people's lives that changed them. I don't know that there was ever a time in my own life that I didn't accept that God existed. In fact, I can remember at times when I was moving over from East Belfast, because we eventually moved there, but my place where I wanted to be was in West Belfast on the Shankill Road. There was a particular snooker hall that we went to, and we gathered there all my mates and friends. And I as I went across the city, and I usually walked across the city, there was an open-air gospel meeting. It was held by the Salvation Army. But as I was walking down the road, I would never walk past it. I would have put my head down and crossed the road and walked away down the other side of the road, because I knew in my heart that I just wasn't right. I couldn't have said that to you in those words, but I just knew there was something inside me making me ashamed. And it was this spiritual poverty and bankruptcy that I was in that was causing me to feel like that. I learned to gamble very early. I just can't remember when I started, but I can remember getting a great bet up on horse racing, and of course I was hooked from there. And anything I earned, everything I got, would have been spent on backing horses or drinking beer, one of the two, both quite often. And I can remember sitting in school, in our religious instruction class, and the teacher that was in charge of teaching his religious instruction would have come down and sat at my desk and opened the newspaper and we looked at the horses. That was my religious instruction, of course. Nobody else in the class was getting religious instruction either. But that was what I was hooked on. A friend of mine, we call him Richie, that was his nickname, he had his own business on the Shankill Road, and when I finished my own job, place where I worked, I would have gone to Richie's for, he would have recovered suites of furniture and redone mattresses and made them like new, and he did most of his deliveries at night, and we would have went out in the van at night and did those deliveries, but we always finished up back in the pubs. One pub in particular on the Shankill Road. And even in those days, pubs closed early. People go out now for a night and they go out at 10, 11 and 12 o'clock. Well, in those days, I'm talking about they were only coming home then. Most of them were. but we had a routine at the weekend. And usually, on the Saturday night, it was the bar, the bookies, the bar, the bookies, the bar, the bookies. After the racing was over, they had what they called pitch and toss. Out round the back where the bookies was, and we went there. And then after that was over, within an hour or so, we were up at a Greyhound station, or Greyhound station, Greyhound racing track on the Cliftonfell Road in Belfast. And of course, we would have gambled there as well, and ultimately finished back in the pub. And many a Saturday night I would have been found at home. I would have stayed at my friend's or stayed out very late, maybe to 3 in the morning. We had found a club that we could drink in to that time. And, you know, this was my life. This was the poverty. I mean, I thought I was having a good time, and my mates thought we were having a good time, but this was the poverty that I was in, the poverty that I was going to recognise fairly soon. But you know, the wee text doesn't only talk about poverty, it talks about agony, because it says this poor man cried. David doesn't say this poor man prayed, he did pray, but he says his prayer was a cry. There was an agony of soul within David. And that was the case with myself. I just knew in my heart that the things that I was doing were not right. The life that I was living was not right. That friend I mentioned to you that owned the business on the Shankill Road in Belfast, his father died, and about a year or so after his father died, someone had approached him and said, you know, you can contact your father. You can get in touch with your father. And I can remember Richie coming over to the snooker hall and saying to me that he was told that. And we could go to these meetings, would you like to go? So Jamesy, that was his right name, but we call him Richie, and I went to these meetings down in the centre of Belfast, down on the Dublin Road in Belfast. And when we went down to those meetings, we used to pass all the Paisleyites going in to the Ulster Hall. Those were the earlier days when the great Free Presbyterian meetings were held in the Ulster Hall. And I can remember going down to those meetings, and it was a meeting maybe something similar to this. It was a smaller room, but you'd have had a medium on the platform. You had a crowd of people gathered, and they would have picked out somebody from the crowd, and your Uncle Sammy, he used to wear this lovely grey suit and red tie, and something that would have distinguished someone that belonged. Well, he says, there's something you were going to do this week, and he doesn't want you to do it. And you know, these were the sorts of things that were going on. One time, we went to a seance in a house off the Shankill Road in Belfast. And when we went into that house, the living room was in darkness. It was just an electric fire was on. And so the room was red, so to speak. And there was someone upstairs groaning. I think the man's wife was unwell. And there were two men with us, and the owner, the husband, and we had a seance, and they started to talk about seeing red Indians coming, and this was going to happen to the woman of the house. That was going to happen. It's a very scary thing, but I can remember those boys telling me something was going to happen to someone belonging to me. And it actually did happen. You know, so there's certainly the working of the devil in that. I recall times when I went home trying to contact these spirits myself. I can recall times at night when I would have tried to speak to whoever or whatever was there. But I can also recall times, especially at night, when I jumped with a start out of my sleep, and I just felt like it was falling and falling and falling, and there was no end to the falling. A real frightening experience of mine. I worked with a man who was a missionary in Africa in the place of employment that I had. It was my father got me a job in that place, and him and I would have spoke about the Bible a bit, you know. But there was others who were Christians in that place, and one lady in particular, her name was Chrissy. She didn't say a lot. She wasn't in your face, but you knew there was something different about her. And Chris and her husband, Adam, they began to pray for me. Now, Adam didn't know me, because in the place where I worked, there was hundreds and hundreds of people worked there. There was quite a number of different firms in that business park. And the only way Adam knew me was when I was walking out with loads of others. And obviously, Chrissy pointed me out, that's Wesley. And these folks were praying for me. And I was unaware of that. But you know, the Lord was working in my heart. I didn't know it. I couldn't tell you that at the time. But the Lord was working in my heart. One day, a friend of mine, Jimmy Manson by name, we were walking up the Shankill Road. And as far as I can recall, we were going to the bookies. It was a summer's evening. And this man from the opposite side of the Shankill Road came right over to us, and he stopped us, and he said, would you like to know how to become a Christian? He said, nah. Nah, we couldn't keep it. We couldn't keep it. And with no intentions of trying. But to this day, I remember that happening. And there was some reason, and I don't know the man, and I've never met him since, and I'll meet him in eternity, but for some reason the Lord caused him to do that, and obviously that was brought to my attention and was maybe in the back of my mind, what with going to Nippers meetings. And Nippers, a wee child, by the way, that's what they call childer in Belfast, Nippers. And I'm not saying when I was a wee boy, because I still am a wee boy now, so I'd rather say a nipper. But anyway, what with picking things up there, what with the open-air gospel meetings, that man coming across and stopping and people praying, to me, as I look back, it was obvious. It was obvious the Lord was seeking me out. There was this emptiness. I mean, I had quite a number of friends up around the Shankill Road. We were all good friends. We all pulled each other out when we needed to. But at the end of the day, you still felt on your own, lonely, unloved, and unwanted. And there was that sort of agony in my soul. I often say to the boys in McGilligan prison, and I've quoted it today to them, the wee couplet, sin, like the bee may bring a little honey, but expect the sting. And I felt the sting often enough. I felt that agony of souls. But the text doesn't only talk about poverty and agony, it talks about mercy. Because David says this poor man cried, and the Lord heard him. People hear you, but they don't really hear. It goes in one ear and out the other. Or even if they are sympathetic, they mightn't be able to do much for you because they find themselves in need. But David said the Lord heard him. And he heard him in the sense that he did something about it. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him. Saved him. In my place of employment, and it was an important place in my experience, it was a job initially. My father got me. I continued to work through it, worked in its showroom and then its dispatch department. And there were people in there that were saved. And there was one fellow in particular that worked in it. And I would have gone home with nearly every night. His name was Campbell, and he was a Christian, and he would have spoke to me about the Lord. So you see the number of things that we're all playing in my experience as the Lord was seeking me out. One beautiful, beautiful June morning. It was the 4th of June, 1967. I went in to work. I came from East Belfast, so I got a bus to the centre of Belfast, and then from the centre out up to the Falls Road. You've heard about that in Belfast. And I worked in a big place up there called the New Northern Mills. There's a whole complex of different companies and firms. And as I went in to work that Monday morning was hard enough to go into work, but boy, this Monday morning was bad. You see, I became disillusioned, even with the gambling. I was cut right back in the drinking as well. I just felt there was no future in it. And when I went in to work that morning, everything was bright and sunny all around me. But it wasn't bright and sunny inside me. I went in to work round about 9 o'clock, and I went to this wee lady, Chris. I says, "Chris, I'd like to talk to you about something." She says, "I'm busy at the moment, but it'll come down." But anyway, we went ahead and started our work, and we usually had a tea break round about 10:30. And Chris came to me. I was working in the dispatch department of that place. She came to me and said, "What is it, Wesley?" And the words, this must have shocked her. Maybe it didn't, but the words just came out of me. "I would love to be saved." I knew there was some experience that people had that seemed to sort things out for them. And I'd said to Chris, "I would love to be saved." She says, "Can you wait till tea time?" Because her husband, Adam, would have come every night. He worked for the government in some centre of Belfast office. And he would have come each evening and picked her up and went home to Glengormley, the outskirts of Belfast, where they both lived until they died not too many years ago. And we went out that night, hundreds and hundreds of other people going out. And we went out for the car. But there was no car. There was no Adam. There was no husband. And we walked up a bit from where he usually picked her up, and we hung about, and as the hundreds of people were streaming homeward, there was a battle going on in my heart, because I was wondering what they were wondering. And I felt awkward and embarrassed, and people seemed to look at Chris and I was going to go and just maybe leave it till some other time. But somehow or other, we waited. And around about 6:10, that was about 40 minutes late, Adam drove in his car. She said to Adam, "Wesley wants to be saved." So she got in the back seat, back passenger seat. Adam asked me to get in the front passenger seat, and he had his Bible on the dash. He's a great man of God, lovely man. Wasn't a preacher, but my, he could talk for Ireland, so he could talk for Ulster. Maybe I should say that. Better saying that to you down here. He showed me simple verses from the Bible, and he said to me, "Wesley, you're in these verses. You're in these verses that I'm going to show you." And he showed me one that said, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." That's Romans 3, verse 23. He says, "You're in that all." And he says, "That's your problem. That's your difficulty. You've sinned against the Lord." He was quite straight with me and talked about the consequences of sin. I knew that. I knew that, but, you know, he was like a doctor. You know you have a problem, you go to the doctor, and the doctor, he makes a diagnosis, and he says, "You're in that verse. But I want to show you another verse that you're in." And he turned to John 3:16, and he says, "You're in this verse as well. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." And folks, that night, sitting in that car, this all came home to me. With all the loneliness, with all the emptiness, with all that sinfulness of my heart, it came home to me that God loved me to the extent that he sent a son to die for me on the cross. For me. Adam says, put your name in there, for God so loved Wesley that he gave his only begotten son. Then he said, I'm going to show you another verse, and you're in this one as well. And he turned to Romans 10 and verse 13, which says, whosoever. He says, you're in that, you're included there. Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And he says, the Lord will save you if you ask him, if you turn from your sin and trust in him. And folks, I knew nothing about praying. I think the last service I was in before that was my brother's wedding. It was in a church of Ireland. You had to kneel. You didn't know whether to stand up, turn round, kneel down or whatever. I certainly didn't hear anything. Not that I was wanting to hear anything, but there was nothing there. But I didn't know anything about praying. And I can remember sitting in the front passenger seat of that car, probably about 20 past 6, 5th of June 1967, calling upon the Lord. I recall saying, Lord, I know that I have sinned against you. Will you forgive me and make me a Christian? Anybody can pray that. But that night in that car, it came from this heart. And I knew it was like a whole burden lifting off me. Adam said, now Wesley, when you're waking up in the morning, the old devil will maybe say, what fool thing was that you did? Well, just you turn him to that verse. Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. They drove me down into the centre of Belfast, where I caught a bus and went over to see the fellow that used to work with me, Campbell. I knew where he lived, didn't live too far from where I lived, and went down. He wasn't in that night. He was out, but his mother was there, his brother was there, and I told him I'd become a Christian. They were delighted. Boy, they were thrilled. I remember his brother taking a pen, and he said, Wesley, he says, if you want to have a life of joy as a Christian, and he wrote the word joy in my hand, he says, remember this, J, that's Jesus. O, that's others. Why? Yourself. Keep that in mind. Put the Lord first. Think of others. Keep yourself behind. Haven't always done that, regrettably, but that's what he told me that night. Adam had talked to me in the car about going to church. He knew the benefits of going to church. He was a Baptist. He belonged to the Shankill Baptist. He lived in Glengormley, but he belonged to a Baptist church up the Shankill. He knew the value of going to church and being there as a young Christian. And I said, yeah, well, I'll when I get some clothes, I'll go. You see, the clothes that I wore, that I worked in, were all the clothes that I had. The shoes that I wore, there were holes in the soles. Whether it was raining or dry, they were the shoes I wore. Such was my addiction to drinking, to backing horses and whatever else. I just didn't have anything decent to wear. Do you know what he did? The next morning, the Tuesday morning, he came to the place where I worked. He went to the boss and he says, "Can I take Wesley out for an hour or so?" And the boss said, "That's fine." And he took me out down into the centre of Belfast and he bought me a brand new suit. Lovely brown suit. And I kept it for ages and ages and ages. That Friday night, I was in a little mission hall called the Branna Mission in Belfast. I went with Kemble. And that Friday night, I don't know what I said, but I was asked to give a testimony. I can't remember what I said. But it was a great wee hall. I went there for a year or so. Loved the fellowship. Heard the preaching. About a year or so after, I joined the Free Presbyterian Church. I've been there ever since. But you know, the Lord turned things round for me. Now, I was in the martyrs at the time. There were thousands of people going. I would have gone up the Ravenhill Road on a Sunday evening, maybe about 5:30, because the prayer meetings were at 6:15 to 6:45. And when you walked up the road was lined with cars, even at that time. You went in for the prayer meeting, the church was full, even at that time. And the prayer meeting was full. And you had to come down at 6:45, you wouldn't have got a seat. Or if you did, you were way up behind all the other seats. There were movable seats, there weren't pews, or you sat on the stairs. Tremendous experience for a young Christian. Coming through, we got involved in the Young People's Fellowship and also the Martyrs Memorial Male Witness. There was about a dozen of us or so, and we went round the country in an old police tender. It's a police van, an old grey thing. The martyrs used to be coming down with them. It was like a scrapyard at one time. There's that many old police buses, but we went round the country, got involved in that, and most of those men are now preachers, retired preachers, elders, all involved in the work of God. Alan Smiley, one of them. Roy Stewart is retired. Another one, there's quite a number of others. David Priestley. And we had great times. We'd have always come back probably about 9 o'clock or sometimes after it. Martyrs was still open. The lights were still on. People were still there. And the question wasn't, was anybody saved tonight? The question was, how many? How many were saved tonight? You know, and for a young man being brought up in that atmosphere, it was tremendous. It was tremendous. I felt that I should serve the Lord. I felt the Lord calling me to the Isle of Man. And I talked to Dr. Paisley about it. But I just saved as much as I could. And I just dropped everything and went over. That would have been 1973. To work in the Isle of Man. I worked there for a year. There was a little Grace Baptist church that I was responsible for about 6 months. Its pastor had moved on to another church on the other side of the island, and I did the preaching on Sundays and their prayer meetings, and that was a good experience. But I did feel the Lord wanted me to go to college. It was no Whitfield then. It was the Theological Hall, and we would have met at the back end of the martyrs, Dr. Paisley, Dr. Alan Kearns, Reverend John Douglas, Dr. Bertie Cook would have been our lecturers then. And it was tremendous to sit in. We didn't know how blessed we were, either in the church. I can recall we were placed as students in various churches. I can recall the men coming in on a Tuesday morning to Dr. Cook's class, and they're all saying, well, this happened this weekend, that happened, and this family have joined us. And Hillis Fleming was a very unusual man. I remember going down to South Wales with Hillis Fleming to visit yourself, and we were trying to sort out the work there. And Hillis was a very come-easy, go-easy person. We didn't get away till late. I think it was 12 o'clock, and by the time we got down, I think it was near tea time. And anyway, we did the business we had to do with your minister. He was down there then, and we were heading back, started out on the road about 8:30, I think it was, and that was August time. And Hillis said, oh, I forgot to tell you, there's no lights in this car, so there's not. I don't know, is it 3 hours, 4 hours drive from South Wales up into Liverpool? And at that time of the year, it got dark, I think about 9:30 or 10, and he drove in the dark. Oh, he says, I can see where I'm going. I says, that's all right, Hillis, but people mightn't see you, you know. And he ducked in behind a lorry and drove up the road. You need to know this man to appreciate that. And at 12 o'clock, we came to the garage. The boy was just about to close. We'll get it sorted. And we called into the garage. We got the bulbs changed, started up the car, turned on the lights. No lights turned on, so we still had to go. We got eventually to there. But what I was going to say about Hillis was he came in to the class one Tuesday morning, and he said he was preaching in the harvest in Macrofelt. And he said, I didn't preach anything different from what I preached before. And 5 people were saved that night. And these were the sorts of things you were hearing week after week after week. You know, it was tremendous. God helped us, God blessed us, God established our denomination. They were great times to live through. Your minister mentioned the Isle of Man. And when it came up, the year 2000, it was brought before the Forward Movement. I was its treasurer for 28 years, and of course, Reverend Beattie said, well, the man to look after that is this man, you know. I've been doing it ever since. So we work, it's just a handful, there's 10 people go to it. Pray for it, please. It needs something done by way of somebody going there and working it full time. Your minister mentioned the prison. That's one of our hymn books from the prison, Free Presbyterian Church of McGilligan. And the first hymn that you sung tonight is a favourite hymn of the prison. You want to hear the prisoners singing that hymn. And even on Facebook, I've seen some of them on Facebook, and they've quoted it, when the trumpet of the Lord shall sound. And boy, they sing it with gusto. They sing it with gusto. There's a boy, Billy Irvine, from the Shankill Road, his hands were like leather. And he had a play at the side of a cupboard, And he knew how to play. He wasn't just thumping. He knew how to play, and he knew the hymns. And one Sunday morning, a prison officer came in. "You don't stop that thumping, I'm going to stop the service." And he went away and sung. The thumping was away. The service is still going on. Folks, I can see the hand of the Lord in my upbringing and my ministry in the prison. For I know full well, had it not been for the Lord saving me, I could have been in there where they are. I could have been behind bars where they are. And I know how they tick. Because of my own upbringing. And it's great to work among them. The congregations ebb and flow, but we've seen people saved, people come to the Lord, and of course there's one of our own ministers has been saved in the maze. I'm referring to our brother Thomas Martin. So do please pray for us as we continue to labour for the Lord in McGilligan. What a wonderful change in my life has been wrought since Jesus came into my heart. Much more I could say, but suffice it to say this. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him. Amen.